This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 718, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 718. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
That is not what the script says, Conroy McDougal Kirkpatrickson.
When I first saw it, I thought, wow, he really butchered my last name, and then it all unfolded. We are iFanboy. You never know. Every week we read a bunch of comics, one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, some other books from the week, some listener mail if we have time. It was a long week, so maybe we won't. But either way, it'll be fun. We have a good time. Hopefully you do as well. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be spoilers. Josh, you had the pick, but also you didn't have a big week because I had a giant week. I had almost 30 books.
I mean, compared to the last like 6 weeks, yeah. It was not inconsequential, but it wasn't giant. I would say I think I topped out at, I never really count, but I think it was like 20-ish, maybe 18, 19, something like that. Hmm. However, this was actually, Superman Smashes the Clan was the last book that I had left over from the winter break that I had not read.
Oh, wow, really?
And I know that I had very much enjoyed Made Pick of the Week, the first issue. Mm-hmm. But over time, I went, oh, yeah, that's there. And I knew it was larger than normal. Right. And also, for some reason, I had thought that was it. There was going to be two issues. Mm. I don't know why. There's no reason for that. Anyway, so over the beginning of the week, knowing I had to prepare, I was reading it. And, you know, a couple of pages in, I went, oh, my God, I forgot. This is amazing.
Right.
So when we got the new books, first thing I read, Superman Smashes the Clan. And there was one bit in it where I thought, I don't like this. And it was the bit where you find out that the head of the clan is just in it for the money, mm-hmm. so that he can go. And I thought, oh, I don't want that. They kind of moved along past that and everything else that was great about it. Like, it was, they showed the big boss and they were like, yeah, we're going to ignore him. We're going to go with the
But did
the
you
grand.
Read the essay in the back?
I read some of it.
That was a real thing.
I have no doubt.
The clan... there's a lot to talk about here, but at one point the clan died in consciousness of the public because the people, the footmen found out the leaders were just in it to bilk them out of money. They didn't really care about the ideology. So that was a real thing. Yeah. To me, the problem with that reveal was I didn't remember who that was because it's been, you know, it was December when the last issue came out. So for me, having not read two in the same week, mm-hmm. I was like, I feel like I'm supposed to know who this is. And eventually they tell you, but at first I was like, I don't know who the Malignant
is. I just don't think, it may have been a real thing, but I don't think it had any impact on the story itself. Like,
well,
you could have taken
layers to the organization.
I know. But you could have taken it out and the story would have gone the same way, and that's fine. But, you know, and also, and he was the boss of
he was the Grand Dragon.
Right, but he was the boss, like the Superman, the project that the father,
yeah,
the Chinese father was working on.
The health department.
Yeah. Anyway, I just think like that stuff seemed a little superfluous. Not bad. I got past it. But for a minute, I thought maybe I'm not going to like this. And then just sort of as I kept going through it, you know, there are just all of these things that I just found so impressive. And I think that the thing that I like the best about it is that it's a very elegant, I'm going to go with that. I was going to say subtle, but it's a very elegant way of talking about a lot of these problems in such a way that it is indirect, I suppose. It isn't hitting me over the head with the fact that we're dealing with social issues and we're dealing with racism and how it feels to be marginalized and all those things, you know, without using those words, without telling me what it is that I should be feeling. He's letting you do it. And at the same time, it has the you know, the auspices of an all ages book. It really, you know, it's heavy stuff, but you could, you know, you could show it to a younger reader and they would get something out of it. And so it manages to be at times fun and lighthearted, but, you know, not just talk about, it's a lot of things at once, basically. And they're very, very elegantly woven together, I think. And so you take that, you put it on top of the fact that, you know, this is a great Superman. Him going back to his, you know, his roots and where we're discovering, you know, we're seeing bits from his childhood, a slightly different take on was it in this issue or the last one where he hears his parents talking?
It was the last one.
Okay. So either way, like that sort of being in the background of him trying to hide what he can do and the little girl being like, you can do more than this, because she notices that when they land, it's, you know, like a gravity thing as opposed to anything else. And
this is the classic.
Yeah.
Early Superman. So he has the early symbol on his chest and he jumps instead of flies, and he runs on power lines instead of flying. And here he finally unleashes the full scope of his powers, including the heat vision and the cold breath, because his new young friend recognizes that he can do more than he can.
And I just thought it all worked really well. I think the sort of motivations of the kid who is the nephew of the grand, is it the Grand Scorpion, I think?
Well, that's the other thing I talked about in the essay, was that the original radio show, which this is based on, couldn't use the real terms for the Klan because of, at the time, it was a legally recognized organization in many states of the United States. So to risk a lawsuit, they had to change the name of the Grand Wizard to the Grand Scorpion and the Ku Klux Klan to whatever they're called here.
The Klan of the Fiery Cross.
Right. So it was interesting to read that in the back. I mean, this is an entire package. You get a great Superman story, and then you really get an interesting history at the end in these essays he's been doing.
Yeah, and I mean, I actually did read the bit about his dad and his, you know, his dad's college friend, because I was looking through the pictures at the back, Dave. And like, I got a little like, that's beautiful. Like, I'm not saying choked up, but I was reading that bit about his parents, and I was like, that's really beautiful. Like, because, you know, like the name of the school is the Unity House. And then you're looking back, you know, what year are we talking about? You know, say 50, 60, 70 years ago, post-World War II. You've got this Chinese guy who has moved here, actually he's from Taiwan. You know, he doesn't speak great English. At that time, I mean, can you just imagine the level of casual racism and just
Yes,
sort of,
but also the Chinese were looked at as our friends. So there was less of that towards the Chinese people as opposed to Japanese people or other.
It's true, but just, I'm just like culturally,
No, for sure, it was there. But through the whole thing. That was the interesting side product of World War II, was that the Chinese were allies against the Japanese. Yeah. So they were treated slightly differently than the Japanese. They weren't put in camps, and they were
right. But either way, like sort of going through the world to like have this person, you know, befriend him, take him home for holidays. Absolutely. Like, I just thought that was really touching. You see sort of the picture of them. He looks a lot like Gene Yang, his dad. You know, I just thought it was really nice, and I think that that's sort of infused in the characters in here. You know, where there's bits where the little girl whose name is actually not Roberta, we learn. She's anglicized herself, even though she's been complaining about how her brother's doing it all along. You know, they find allies, basically, you know, and the kids that she wasn't getting along with, maybe it wasn't for the reasons that she thought, or it was only partially those reasons. Again, it's a lot of things that get mixed in that sort of make a story that in the end feels good, you know, like
great story.
Yeah. It, like the way that Superman story should. Exactly. I have two complaints.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two complaints. One, they did say that the S means hope. And I was like, don't do that. Don't take that. Leave that where it belongs. It's not even bad.
It was just it was written in the newspaper headline. But yes, I did notice that.
The origin is tainted. And then second, I was looking at Superman's spit curl in this, and it's awesome. I love the way it's drawn. And then they cut to him as Clark Kent, and he still got it there. And I was like, no, that's the whole thing.
Right. Slick it back.
This Roberta kid's not stupid. She knows what's going on. Or I guess her name is Lee. Where is it? Lan Shin Lee. And she gets to be a reporter. Or a cub reporter and what, you know, like in the Jimmy Olsen stuff.
We let 8-year-old kids have jobs.
I mean, Connor, what difference would it make from what we read now?
So I just mean at jobs in general. I was watching Mr. Smith Goes to Washington,
sure,
and the 8-year-old Senate pages. This is great, and it's interesting that one of the more Americana feeling stories is written by done by an entirely Asian creative team. Mm-hmm. Which just goes to show you
Asian American, or well, I don't know.
Exactly.
I know Gene Yang is, but
I think the whole point is like it doesn't really matter what your background is to tell these stories. And what was great about it was because these are long; these are like 70 pages. You know, at the one point, in the middle, he defeats, or you think he defeats the main guy. And you're like, wow, okay, what's gonna happen next for the next 50 pages? And so there's a lot of story here. There's a great Lois Lane in this book.
Yes.
And there's even a cameo from Dick Grayson in this issue. But the art's beautiful. We're not talking enough about Grihiru, who is one person or a studio or whatever, but it's terrific. We've talked about it before. It's slightly animated. It's slightly manga-y. But it's all terrific. Great storytelling.
And it's doing a lot. It's a period piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really capturing that. I want to say, what's it, mid-30s, middle of the Depression? Is it?
Yeah, I think so. Before it's pre-World War II.
It's pre-World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, it's great. Like all the way through. It's really wonderful cartooning.
I was
like
thinking about this as I read it, as someone who hosts the animated shows, and man, they should just hand this collection to Bruce Timm's team and say, do this. I mean, this would be a great film, very relevant to now, and It's a rollicking good time. I mean, there's a lot of heavy social stuff in here, but it's all wrapped up under the gift wrapping of a really exciting Superman story.
Yeah,
and he's
that's not to say that they're underplaying it.
No, like, not at all. That's why it's sort of perfectly balanced. Superman's in the title, and he's the main character, but there's about four other main characters here that you get to know really well over the course of these, you know, three issues, which are graphic novels, end up being graphic novel size. You know, you've got the two kids, you have the cop, and I say no real well, but not knowing their name, Inspector Henderson, who's interesting, and then Lois gets a lot of play here, and Jimmy's a pretty big character. Everyone sort of gets a lot to do.
Yeah, and there's character development. You know, Perry White has character development. The Chinese kid's dad has. And
also
the mother,
the son of the nephew of the, not the Grand Dragon, but the second command guy, who he has an interesting arc.
Absolutely.
There's just a lot going on here. You know, there's a scene where Clark goes back because he needs a hug from Mom, Pa Kent, which was a great scene. And then later on,
that.
In the Fortress of Solitude, he gets the same hug from his Kryptonian parents, and it was just a lot of great stuff going on here, a lot of great storytelling. And it really rewards a careful reading.
Yeah,
there's a lot to notice.
It was delightful, and I think it's summed up a little in the idea that you wrote to me. I guess it was yesterday in the afternoon, and I had read, I don't know, like five or six of my books, and but I had read this, and you go, so that's the pick of the week, right? And I was like, well, I haven't finished, but yes. And honestly, nothing even nothing even came close. Nothing in the last
a lot of good books this week, but
yeah, I no, mean, but no, nothing in the last month has come close.
We were talking about this. Is this? I mean, one and two came out last year. Two came out while we were on break, so we didn't get to talk about it. But I mean, this would be a book of the year candidate if it came out all in one year.
Yeah, but since we don't do that, it's the best book I've read in quite a while.
Yes.
Oh, like sure. as a full package. I mean, it's you know, like, what's the last great thing you read? This is the last great thing I read.
God, I'd love to hear this radio show.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's anywhere.
I mean, if it's anywhere, it's on YouTube.
Or I mean, yeah, but this is a great this is a great Superman book in a time where Superman is having a mini renaissance that may have ran smack into a wall, but at least we have Superman smashes the Klan right now.
Yep.
And other Superman books we'll talk about in a minute.
Wonder Twins number 12. This really is the end of it.
Yes, the final issue.
It's final issue. Says it very clearly
on the cover.
On the cover. I'm not getting this wrong. I laughed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Reading this one and the next book that we're going to talk about. You know, this did the Russell thing.
Yes.
Where, you know, at the end, there's still the fun, but you know, there's a weight that you stick with these ridiculous things. I don't know how he does that. And also then there's, you know, surprising things where the Scrambler, who was the villain for the first sort of half of it, sort of isn't. And like a couple of things happen. One, at the beginning, they're on the run from the Justice League, which I was like, that's weird. And then the Justice League listens to them and reverses.
Mm-hmm.
And like the adults go, all right, you're right. You know, we sort of judged it wrong and you know, let's be forgiving and you know, all like it was nice. Superman gives her a hug.
Mm-hmm.
That was really sweet. And you know, they set up this new asterisk thing for what's his name? Philo Math and his daughter to work at, and you find out that the Scrambler has switched brains with the sort of head of Lex's corporate prison
mm-hmm.
person. You know, and he's off. He's changed his whole philosophy and he's moving around. There was a Gleek moment. There was a heartfelt Gleek moment where he goes feral,
yeah.
Takes out the ringmaster guy. You know, it was
helps having a monkey on your team. I mean, they're not on the run from the Justice League. They're just in conflict with them. And so there's a lot of discussion. It's not like the Justice League is chasing them or after
right.
them.
Right. Well, they had the idea that might happen, like, because they're harboring fugitives.
Right. They're just worried the Justice League would find out they're harboring fugitives. And,
right.
And so they're sort of hiding stuff from them. But there's a lot of just little, you know, little bits of business. There's been a lot of commentary in the prison industrial complex here. There's been a lot of commentary on cable news with Lex News, and
yep.
There's a lot of that gets wrapped up here. This was a great issue. He writes a funny Batman.
He does, and you know, he knows where to put the weight. You know, he never really makes Zan doesn't really undergo any character development.
No.
He's just along for the ride. And that's funny. It works. It was just really good. Again,
there was one point during the emergency where they turned into a puddle and a pug. Like, we panicked. And that was funny.
Yes, it is. It was just, you know, another really good series that at the beginning I thought maybe this will be the one I'm not interested in, you know? Because I wasn't excited to read a Wonder Twins book, but it didn't matter.
He just wants to show you that he can take any characters and make it interesting.
Well, you know, and part of the theme
you
that's
love
been
Red Sonja.
Well, it's true. No,
I
but
would have never predicted that.
Part of the thing that I've been, you know, over the sort of, I'm reading a lot of books that I may not have read in the past,
mm-hmm.
because that's where the quality is.
Right.
So the idea of sort of how you judge what you're going to like or what you're going to read is a different thing to me now. Lately, because you're trying to find gems. You're trying to figure out like what's going to speak to you, and you can't necessarily say, as we move on to Plunge number one, mm-hmm. that I don't like horror, so I'm not going to read this.
Well, what's interesting about Plunge number one is I read it, I remember enjoying it, and then as we were just talking, I was frantically scrolling through it to remember what happened in it because it didn't stick with me.
That's going to happen about a book that we're going to talk about later for sure.
This is a pretty big comic written by Joe Hill. This is another Hill House comic, Vertigo. And it's drawn by Stuart Immonen, who had retired from comics not too long ago, but is now back.
Never make that announcement.
Got bored.
The thing is this. Stuart Immonen is a modern master, period. You've got Dave Stewart coloring over him. So, you know, and Joe Hill, I'm not a fan of the genre. I'm not, but he does write a hell of a comic.
He writes good comic. I mean, he wrote Lock and Key, which, you know, is on Netflix now, but it was a great comic. He clearly came out of the gate knowing how to write comics, which is not always the case with people from other mediums. We talk about this all the time, but he clearly, as a longtime fan of comics, really studied how to do it and is good at it. He came out of the gate strong, and he's still good. I still am enjoying all of the Hill House books I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves Jaws.
Yeah, me too. He does love Jaws. I was like, oh, there it is. There's the Jaws in this one. You know, but and also, you know, he has a voice. You know, like there's a theme. There's a sort of a seagoing, often a, you know, Maine, like his dad, or, you know, like Northeast kind of thing. This is actually not that, but it's still, we're on a ship.
In Alaska,
you know, right? Yeah, there's a working class sort of vibe going on. I don't think Maine and Alaska are maybe that different. And sort of some of the folks who work on the sea. I've seen that crab show, and I was people, like, those all seem like Mainers.
People who escape society.
Now, I am actually totally, it's not much of a horror book until the last page, really.
Right, that's true.
It's almost like almost like hard science fiction, and not science fiction like space, but something's going on with the fish or this area, you know, that's things are strange.
Well, there's this little island inlet. I don't know if this is a real thing or not. I was going to look it up. I didn't look it up. Where that's like on the border of Alaska and Russia, and it's sort of no man's land where it's technically the U.S., but Russia also claims it, and, you know, what are they going to do?
I'm sure that is a thing that, not specifically is, but I'm positive
this
that's
boat
a real thing.
Full of blue-collar roughnecks, salvage experts who, you know, they're not a big outfit, but they're a group of charming, long-haired, hipster-bearded salvage experts get hired to go out there and invest and find something that was a ship, right? It was a ship that had been lost forever and has resurfaced, and so they've been hired by this oil company to go get this ship, and meanwhile there's some weird shit going on with the fish.
Well, because it's the area is an atoll, and it was a crater that was set off by a very big asteroid, not the one that killed the dinosaurs, but the one before or after that, I think. So, you know, some alien shit going on or something like that. I don't really know. And then at the end, and then also, like, there's a ship that went down, and they're getting a radio signal from it for the first time in 40 years or something like that. And so, like, what's going on? That's weird. And we know, it's sort of a horror book, then something's going to happen. That's not going to be what it seems. And the last page seems to suggest that, which is not my favorite thing, but.
And
there
are dildos.
That's an important thing. There is a dildo discussion scene. It's a big, he pulled up a crate of dildos and he's trying to unload them.
10 sets of dildo. I liked it. I did like it. I agree with you. I think Joe Hill writes good comic. His characters are engaging. It's funny. It doesn't hurt that the art is terrific. There's also a woman from an institute. She's basically Hooper, who comes to help them. I liked it. I'm looking forward to more. I really am. We don't tend to read horror, but I've been enjoying all these Hill House books.
You know, you got to go where the quality is. You can't say I don't like football movies if you haven't watched Friday Night Lights. You know what I mean? Like
it's a TV show.
It is a movie also, and a book.
That's true.
I couldn't get that wrong no matter what I said, and I was prepared for it.
I was going to say Any Given Sunday, but that's fine too.
That's a great speech in that movie. That's all I remember about it.
It's a great speech. So, from someone who knew nothing about football, I was a little... I got my nose out of shape about Deceased, The Unkillables, number one, the sequel to the Deceased books that we loved. It was one of our books of the year. It was written by Tom Taylor, and this time it was written by Tom Taylor with art by Carl Moster, who is clearly in the Frank Quietly, Chris Burnham school.
What's interesting, though, is that I don't know who Mostert or whatever he is, but I was like, I don't know why this guy rated 3 inkers.
Well, yeah, that was the
other on the first issue, so I'm like, maybe he's good, but he gets behind.
So at first I was like, I don't want a sequel because it was a very popular book. And
I agree.
The inevitable sequel. This is only 3 issues. Although the last one, I think, was only 5, and they added a 6th issue to it, so who knows. But at the end of the day, I really enjoyed it because this world that he's created is interesting. And the, and as we said before, it's basically this weird Elseworld story that where there are real stakes and anything can happen. And here we're just dealing with some more characters that we didn't deal with before, primarily the villains, but there's a lot of Cassie Cain and Jason Todd here who exist. This whole book exists in a weird middle ground where some of the characters are New 52 designs, some of them are classic designs like Cassie and her old Batgirl suit. I didn't like love it as much as the first one. I think some of it had to do with the art, which I didn't love as much. But you know, it's this, it's the same sort of feeling as the other book.
It's true. I think my take on it was that I liked Jason Todd and Cassandra in this as sort of a touchstone that we can go with, in the fact that I feel like I don't have a handle on Jason Todd at all.
Yeah, no one really does. He doesn't.
Yeah, like
he doesn't need to exist.
I don't know what I feel of, like how I'm supposed to feel, like if he's a good guy or a loose cannon.
Yeah,
I think that they need to come up with a standard for that at DC. This is Elseworlds, so whatever. So them off doing things and him acting like Robin and, you know, her being the cool character she is great. As we get into the Slade, Ravage, supervillains, I don't care about that so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing about DC that was great was that in this world, all this stuff going on, like we had amazing character moments with the characters who we know really well, and Tom Taylor just did that really well in those relationships. I'm not going to have that here because there's not a lot of characters who I do know that, you know, at least if, say, 2/3 of the book or half the book are these villains. I will say my favorite thing about this is that Jim Gordon, pretty much every other time you look at him, is drinking from a flask.
Wouldn't you?
I know. Shit's going down. And I love that it's not mentioned. It's just in his hand a lot. And like you can see him, he's always reaching into his jacket like on every other page. And I thought that was really funny, especially if no one mentions it. It's just an art thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you're right. The very last page, he's reaching into it. That's great. I had noticed that he was drinking, but I didn't see that last bit. Oh, wow. Before that, too. It's really funny. You can almost time it.
Yeah.
I liked Jason Todd finding the Joker's body, getting mad that he didn't kill him, and then trussing him up on front of the Batmobile as like
that was great.
A deer trophy as he smashes through things. I also like Vandal Savage being like, hey, I've been through these kind of things before. Like, outbreaks, and we'll be fine.
And you know what? I'll give the writer credit. He might make these characters very interesting to me, and then what I said doesn't matter.
I also really liked Jim when they rescued the kids, Jim Gordon calling Jason Todd Robin in his face. As they're basically the new Batgirl and Robin, and that his face was funny. It's just, I mean, there's a reason why we love the first one, and I thought there was a lot here, and I agree with you that you don't have the really terrific moments that we had between like Black Canary and Green Arrow and Hal Jordan, but like we might get them through other ways, and it's only 3 issues, so it might just be...
I'm going to read it. I'm in. You know, like there's no...
I just don't know how I feel about the art.
I don't mind it.
It wasn't bad, but like there was a real weight to the art in Deceased.
Well,
that's not here.
What's interesting to me is that, I don't watch this stuff, but you said it was a fairly successful book.
Yeah, very successful, yeah.
And I don't know any of the names working on this. So I'm not willing to say like they're a B team, but it's weird. Like it's not like they're pulling out even the house guys.
Oh, I don't. I mean, Trevor Scott and Neil Edwards. I mean, the inkers, John Livesey, those are all inkers we know. But like I've never heard of Carl Moster.
Or Rex Locus on colors. Or I think Saida Temafonte. I think she maybe lettered the last
one. She letters a lot of stuff, but
yeah.
The artist is definitely new. So that was interesting. Yeah. Who knows why? And who knows why there's 3 inkers? But I enjoyed it. It wasn't like blow your socks off it good as the first one. But that's because we already expected it to come, I guess.
Yeah, we had no expectations of that other one. And we only read the first one because it was a patron pick.
Yeah.
That's
I also
awesome.
Like Jason burying the bodies of Batman and Dick and Tim. I wanted to talk to you about the Old Guard Force Multiplied. I don't know if we've talked about it yet.
I don't think. It's because I wasn't here for one of them, and then it was over the break.
This is the sequel to The Old Guard. This is written by Greg Rucka, drawn by Leandro Fernandez, the team from the first miniseries. The first miniseries was 6 issues, and I think 4 of them were Pick of the Week. And so we're 3 issues into this one, and that's what I want to talk to you, because I'm curious if you're having as much trouble as I am.
My level of excitement is not what it was. I've been approaching them with, I guess, like a lack of excitement. As I sort of get going in each one, this is the third one.
Yeah.
As I get going in each one, like I sort of remember the things that I like about it.
This one the most of all the issues so far.
Yeah. And also, like, I put things together, like, basically, they're telling the story of this other person that they lost. And I was like, oh, wait, that's the lady from the other one, you know.
And that's been my problem, is that he didn't really, especially for a book that was gone for so long, there was no hand-holding, which can be totally fine. But, like,
that's a very Greg Rucka thing.
I had to be like, wait, who, what, and where, and why, and mostly who. And
I really have – that's one of the other things. I've really lost I don't remember who the characters, like, I recognize them, but I don't remember what it is about them. And we spent a lot of time with them before. So at the end of the first mini, like, you knew those two guys were a couple and this guy went through this. And now I don't remember. Right. So I think there are things that are happening that are significant that I'm not picking up on because I don't.
Exactly. Remember. And that's the trouble I've had with it. Now, this issue I thought was really good. And especially from an art side, it opens up with a tale from a old pirate ship. Or an old ship. They all just look like that, so I call them old pirate ships. But
I believe it means old wooden ship.
And, God, it's a harrowing journey, and Leandro Fernandez draws the fuck out of this scene. I mean, I thought there's a great... He's always been good with negative space, but usually with shadow here, he uses it the opposite to show the water with the negative space, and it's just... It's harrowing. It's captivating to look at. I thought this opening sequence was just terrific. And then by the end of it, I was like, okay, I have a couple. I know these people a little bit better than I did before. I'm starting to remember things, but it's like, you know, we're halfway through, you know.
Yeah. And I remember the main character pretty well. What's her name? I don't remember her name, but like I remember her deal. You know, she's the tough one. She's been around forever. As we sort of get into the crew, I forget. And I remember the new girl whose name I don't remember either. But, you know, I was looking at this thinking, I was like, man, was Leandro Fernandez my favorite on Queen and Country? And then I went, well, no, because there was also like, but I think the point is like, he's as good as any of the other guys. Who drew the first arc? I can't think
it
of it. Phil Bond. Phil Bond.
He at the time he wasn't. We liked him more than other people at the time.
He's
people
a
really
vertigo
hated
guy.
Him. Leandro Fernandez, because he draws exaggerated faces.
Yeah, no, and I feel like people really didn't like him, but as I remember going through it, just going, this guy's amazing. I don't care if
he
draws a hook nose.
Yeah, he was great. And he really draws, the hell out of these books. I mean, there's full backgrounds, full crowds. It really
beautiful.
Feels like a world. But man, I can't just, if you're in a comic store, you see this, just leaf through the beginning just to check out this scene. It's
incredible. Gorgeous.
I'm starting to feel like I know these people a little bit better than I did the last two, and for that reason I enjoyed it more. But I just wish I didn't have to spend 3 issues playing catch up in my brain.
I mean, you know, in a perfect world, you would go back and read the first issues again, and you'd be like, all right, and then this would probably be better. But
I ain't got time for that, Greg.
Yeah, that's true. But also,
the world's burning.
We also understand why comics work the way they do, especially ones like this.
I understand.
So you deal
I'm
with
just
it.
Saying. Throw me a bone. That's all. Hey, throw us a bone at patreon.com/ifanboy. That's how you can help support the show. There's lots of ways to help support the show. That's the primary one. We think everyone does that. Our next stretch goal is a monthly non-comics media show in which Josh and I or some grouping of us who've been on the show will talk about something non-related to comics once a month. In addition to that, we will upload the missing video shows, the minis, the full-length shows to our YouTube channel. For the longtime fans who were around 10 years ago and remember those shows. So, patreon.com/ifanboy, that's how you can go help us out. Thank you very much. Also, fanboy.threadless.com. That's where you can find our t-shirts, our Fanboy logo shirt, our Herm shirt, Pickle League podcast, ratings if one is Electro, GDAT, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. Those are all there. And as I said before, we have two other shirt ideas that we are slowly working on. Some things have come up recently that have gotten in the way, but we're still trying to keep the train rolling. Life gets in the way sometimes. fanboy.com/support. That's where you help us out via PayPal. If you want to just leave us a donation, tip, it's like our tip jar. People do that. We thank you very much. And also fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find the links to our Booksplode books as well as a general link. And we thank everyone who does all those things to help keep the show going. We would not be here without you. And that's the truth.
That is the truth.
So thank you.
There it is. I'd say the most fun book that I read this week, the one that made me laugh a lot, like, downstairs, like everyone's sleeping, and I was like, be quiet, was Jimmy Olsen's pal number, Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen number 8. And I don't really have a lot else to say.
Which is funny, because, it's not funny. We've been talking about this a lot. It's just, neither one of us are big Fraction fans. And
this is the best thing he's ever done, as far as I'm
concerned. There was a point where you thought this might be too much, but...
I think I was cranky that week.
So, hey, listen, you're allowed to have a cranky week.
I know.
I really love 90s Jimmy. So... Jimmy's thought to be dead, and so we have a play on Reign of the Superman. So there's four different Jimmys that they're not. None of them are actually Jimmy. They're people pretending to be Jimmy. The kids, and so I really liked 90s Jimmy, who talks, you know, everything's bogus and radical, which was what we said, and we thought it was cool, and then. I really liked, though, the Eradicator Jimmy, who was like a male model, but it was really just a couple of kids in a suit, which made me laugh. The two supermodels tried to get him to come home with them, and he just starts shaking. And then they fall over, and the girls leave, and there's just two kids who get out of the inflatable suit, which was funny.
I'll tell you right now, my favorite panel in the entire thing. It was on page 20 on Gorilla CNN, and it's a gorilla with a very stern look on his face, and it just says ook 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 ook, and then there's the picture of Jimmy.
Yeah,
everything about that panel is fantastic, and so, I just looked at it now and lost it.
There's a callback here to the beginning of the series in which Jimmy was on his book tour in Gorilla City, meets that girl, right. They sleep together. The cat, vomit cat from Sinestro Core War, was there. And they got married. I'd forgotten totally about that. She reappears here as almost a deus ex machina. Like, what else could go wrong? And then she crashes her ship into his building. And that was a great conversation. She's like, remember in Gorilla City? And he was like, you're going to have to be more specific.
No, he said she said the last time you were there. And he's like, well, because he's been back. He's like, I go all the time. It's a city of gorillas.
It's great. This is a great book. It's totally goofy and full of nonsense and terrific. And the Steve Lieber art is
wonderful. Oh, I mean, that's key. This does not work without him.
No, and he needs to be an artist for this.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he's. I put him up there. You know, I put him up next to Stuart Immonen as sort of just like one of the best storytellers and acting guys. That, you know, he can draw serious stuff. I don't necessarily want him to get typecast as a comedy guy, but. I mean, he's better at than anyone, so.
He's just got the chops.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that he's getting work.
Yes. For a while, we weren't seeing him, and now we're seeing him more often, which is rad.
Valkyrie, Jane Foster, number 8. Jason Aaron with new co-writer Torin Grönbeck from Iceland. It's her first comic book, I believe.
The mysterious Torin Grönbeck.
And Kafu on art. And I really liked this issue. It felt more authentic, maybe just because I knew that this Icelandic artist was on it. Couple of things here. Number one, no one told Mahmoud Asrar, the cover artist, that they're using the old Thor design inside the book, because he's drawing the new Thor design on the cover.
Yeah, that's true.
And then this is a fun team up with Valkyrie and Captain America and Thor and Spider-Man and Doctor Strange. The Earth is sick, and it's sending up all these sort of almost antibody-esque creatures to the surface, and they've got to fight them.
I balk a little at the idea that, like, we got to bring Thor into this already. But I guess if you're going to bring him, I mean, this is the, you'd bring him in. That's why you do this book, to do this. But I thought they're, you know, they're trying to get attention with it. I'll tell you what the best part of this was. Spider-Man and the horse.
Yes.
Which is a callback to one of the tie-ins from
the war book.
Yeah. Hey, did you know Buttercup? And I was like, all right. That was because that was a really good story where he had a relationship with a horse named Buttercup, and then that horse died.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was never going to think about that again, but they brought that back. And I think there's just one more, you know, him and Mr. Horse seem to have a little relationship going on.
He likes horses. Horses like him.
Yep. That was great. I really dug that. That was funny. Also,
for some reason, I don't know why, harkened back to me when you were a kid and Captain America would show up in another book and you'd go, oh,
uh-huh.
Like, this is serious. Cap's here. I also really enjoyed that Tony was off on some other part of the world and jealous of their team up as it got bigger and bigger.
It just took me a little bit. Like, I didn't realize that was him. I was like, this doesn't make sense. And I had to go back to the first one and they said who it was and that it was Tony. It was fine. But I was like, what's happening?
Come on. Oh,
yeah.
That was fun.
No, it was fine.
I liked this book, and this was a great issue, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to seeing what, you know, there's a lot of mythology here, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Torin brings to the table.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be fun. I want to talk about Daredevil 18 because
I was surprised about that.
Chip Zdarsky, Jorge Fornes, Daredevil was a book that was great, and then it was a book that was really bad, and now I think it's back to being a book that's very good. And a lot happened here. This is a pretty big issue. And so here, this is part 8 of Through Hell. And a couple of things happened in this issue. Number one, I finally like that cop character. I didn't like him in the beginning, and now I do. Number two, a very serious thing happened at the end of this issue with the murder. It was one of those things where it sort of turns on a dime, like the story.
Yeah.
And number three, I love how sort of emasculated and neutered Kingpin has become. It's an interesting turn for his character. This rich family who is the secret power behind New York, has totally just taken his legs out from under him, and he's just sitting in his bed. He can't do anything. He's totally useless.
Which sets you up for the rise of the Kingpin also.
Sure, but I think everything that's happening now is interesting. Couple of negative things. Number one, at the end when all the bad guys show up who have been hired by the family, what the fuck happened to Bullseye?
I don't think I'd noticed that until I was just looking at it right now. That's a terrible outfit.
That's like, of all the many terrible outfits we have discussed,
wow,
that is one of the worst.
Yes.
And then number two. The NYPD does not allow beards, let alone giant hipster beards, on their cops. Just going to put that out there.
Yeah, that's
true. There's one cop who looks like Rock and Roll from G.I. Joe, but with like a giant Rock and Roll beard.
Yep.
I was like, nope, this ain't Portland.
This is the complaint you're going to keep hearing from me in pretty much everything. Oh, Daredevil or Bullseye's there. Awesome. You know, like they keep the nemesis over and over and over again in every book.
You must have hated Batman this week.
I didn't read Batman.
All right, well, it's
I stopped reading Batman.
Joker's about to be the new big bad for all the Batman books.
Why?
Gotta move units.
It's almost like you could have this team of the bad guys coming in, and like, I don't mind that idea, but and I guess Bullseye would be on that team since he's the villain for hire or whatever. But I just thought, don't. Please.
It's interesting that he's not in the front. Crossbones is in the front. I guess that's Rhino.
Well, Crossbones would be leading that.
I don't know who the fuck those other two people are, but
that like a Mach 1 or 2 through 5 or whatever he is?
Maybe, but the guy
who was in the Thunderbolts?
It's just a really, really awful Bullseye. And I think he had just showed up in Valkyrie in his classic awesome Bullseye costume.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if Jorge Fornes is responsible for that costume, but that being aside, the guy's a beast.
Yeah.
And I know that previously I had talked about, like, you know, if he's just going to be doing a Dave Mazzucchelli act, that's going to get old. And I don't think that that's happening. I think that he's doing his own thing. The scene where the thing that is a big deal that happens, that panel is beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. and just really great storytelling in there.
No, I think when he came on the book, it changed because there was a part in the middle where the art was really terrible in the book.
Yeah.
And the story kind of got plotted down in that affair Matt was having, and like it was like nothing interesting was happening.
I didn't hate it as much as you do. It took a dip for sure, but I stuck with it. I wasn't worried about that.
I know right around when Kingpin went on that meeting with and then got the murder happened. I think it's been an interesting book. The first three issues we were like, wow, this is terrific, and then it got kind of muddled because of the art would change and not always great ways. But I think we're back.
It's good here. Daredevil.
Those are the books we're going to talk about. There's a lot of books. We could have talked about more. As it is, we're already running long. But iFanboy.com is where you can go talk about other books we didn't get to talk about. But let's do the patron pick, patreon.com/iFanboys, where you can go and vote to add a book to the rundown. And the wire-to-wire favorite this week was Bang, number one. Bang. From Dark Horse.
Bang. Bang.
Matt Kint writing, Wilfredo Torres pencils, Na-Young Kim on colors, and Nate Picos, who also usually has an exclamation point after his name on letters.
Blambot.
What did you think of Bang?
Well, do you remember how you said that you couldn't remember a thing about Plunge?
Yes.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I am sure, and I understand that Matt Kint is a very talented comic book creator. He has never done a single thing that has resonated with me.
That's true. I do recall that. You've never liked any of his big buzz books.
And I want to, because I have a feeling like I want to know what I'm missing, but I can't find it. And as I'm going through this, I'm remembering it, and I think, oh, there's some interesting ideas in here, but nothing I grabbed onto.
It's a fairly standard take on James Bond. There's nothing really groundbreaking here. I mean,
it's like a meta take on the sort of fictional.
We're supposed to be like
omnipresence of him.
I guess shocked or something that the traditional Roger Morris James Bond dies in the beginning, and then the next time we see him, he's a black guy. So it's kind of like, oh, it's the whole debate about James Bond. But then the realization is there's always been a. It's not obviously his name's not James Bond. It's whatever it is.
Thomas Cord.
And so we see a part where he is sort of revealed that there's always been James Bonds. There's one that looks like Sean Connery, and there's two women, and it, you know, I didn't dislike it. I definitely didn't dislike it. I just didn't find it as sort of groundbreaking. So he's everyone's looking for this book, this sort of old spy novel. That's the MacGuffin here that has some sort of cryptology in it that'll do things. You know, code. There's code in it. And our main character finds the writer, and that's what he explains, that he's always been, there's always been these different versions of him. And also, he has other books. One of them is Die Hard. There's John McClane on the cover. I don't know if there's going to be some sort of meta team-up of characters here, but I will say this. The book opens and closes with a page from his novel, and he's a really bad writer.
I don't think I read it.
I read them both. And not good. Not good.
Yeah, I just there was basically nothing that I you know, it's not bad. It's not like I've read books and be like, "Oh, this is bad." I just didn't care. Wilfredo Torres, I believe we know from the Mark Miller.
He's been around a
Jupiter's
lot. Yeah.
Jupiter's one of them. Yep.
Jupiter's the second one that took place in the past.
He's okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay in this.
He's solid.
You know,
he tells the story well.
Yep. You know, good acting, good characters. That stuff's all going well the way it should. Faces get a little rubbery sometimes.
Yeah, that's kind of his stuff. I tell you what, the way to be a writer is to have a robot do it for you.
I like
you stand there with a pipe in your hand while a robot types for you. It seems to be the way to go.
Well, what this a little bit reminded me of was Mike Carey's Unwritten.
Okay.
Which you remember? Do you remember that at all?
I read the first. Finished it.
There was an author, you know, and he had like this family, and there was this whole line about what's fiction and what isn't, and like he basically wrote like a Harry Potter kind of thing, and so the main character was that kid. It was a whole thing. I mean, it was like 50 issues or something like that. Right. It was a much more thoughtful version of this, I think. But I don't know. I'm not that far in it, but yeah, I'm.
I mean, it's a take on James Bond. It's a take on the fact there's always been a sort of James Bond in this, you know, in the world, and
to take on, you know, whether Idris Elba would have been him. It's like a little bit of, you know, a fan service is. I don't know if that's the right term, but
yeah, that'd be fan service-y. Mm-hmm. I'm not uninterested in seeing what happens next, but I'm also not like gonna keep my eye out for it.
If it was a moderately heavy week, you'd be like, meh.
Yes. Yeah. If it was another week where I had 10 books, I'd probably read the second issue. Mm. If that tells you if we're sticking with it or not. I'm Josh definitely not sticking with it.
No.
I might stick with it, but trending towards probably not.
Okay.
Ratings.
Ratings?
3.
Ratings. 2.5.
There you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. You give it any level, you can vote that a book to the rundown and also take part in our hangouts and all the fun stuff that happens with the patrons, including patron powers. If you give it the $5 higher level, we give you powers live on the show. Josh, did you prep this week?
Well, while you were doing the middle bit there.
Oh, good. Perfect.
Yeah.
So then you can start us off then.
Yeah. Colin Shardling, or as we call him, the Shardmeister, right. Has the ability to fling peas with devastating accuracy within a 3 to 9 foot distance.
Only 3 to 9 feet.
And only peas.
Because I'm looking at a room that's, you know, wider than 9 feet. He couldn't hit the wall across the room in a certain spot.
9 feet is the maximum distance. 3 feet is the minimum distance. But again, I want to.
So if you were across a table from him, like a little bistro table, mm-hmm. and he wanted to hit you with a pea, he would just miss wildly.
I have to point. It's devastating accuracy.
Right.
So it might be accuracy, but it won't be devastating.
I see.
Or it would be devastating, but not accuracy. But if you're within 2 feet of him, the pee's not going to do you any damage. He might hit where he wants to, but it's not devastating accuracy. You have to be within those parameters. And again, right. I can't stress, it has to be a pee. It can't be a pee-like object.
Right.
It can't be something with it. It can't be a rock that is pea-sized. It's a pee.
So as Jimmy Hoffa says, you run from a knife, you charge a gun. You also charge a pee.
Yes.
Because the closer you get to pee, the safer you are.
Or you move slightly further away.
Corey Maurer. Maurer.
Maurer.
Maurer. Mm. He can control other people's blood sugar levels.
Oh, that's nice.
So, if you wanted to give everyone a lot of low energy, just bring everybody down.
Wilford Brimley could hire him to follow him around.
Yeah, great for people with diabetes, but also just make everyone sort of lethargic.
Or take away the hanger.
That's true. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of practical benefits, but also... Uh-huh.
You know. Is it passive or active?
No, active. He actively can control your blood sugar levels.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Sean Aaron Jensen takes perfect profile photos. Without even thinking about it, like take a picture. It's like, and this is the optimum profile photo for you in any of your social media needs.
Are they all in silver tone?
It depends on the person and the need. Mm-hmm. The point is, he knows how to conceive and execute. Yeah, that's just a thing I'm going through right now because it's fun.
And so this is better for your Twitter profile as opposed to your Instagram profile. So he would know.
Yeah,
he's just a social media expert.
It's more than that.
There's magic to it.
Listen, I don't know what it is, but this is he's like a kingmaker, but with profile photos.
Matt Damon can remove all stains.
Wow.
From clothes, from furniture, from rugs.
Here's my problem.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time, I'm not exaggerating, every single time I get a new piece of clothing, and I always wear new clothing immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I get clothing, I put it on. I then cook dinner, and I will get hit with one droplet of oil or grease, and I will ruin that clothing immediately. And it's very hard to get that out.
Well, first of all, why do you do that then, if you know you're going to do it?
Listen, we find ourselves in patterns.
Do you not have an apron?
I do. It has a Superman symbol on the front, but has a J in it instead of an S.
What does that mean?
Like Super Josh.
No, I know that, but the S stands for hope. So what does the J stand for?
Lethargy.
Disappointment.
a sense that I should have been better.
Regret. The J stands for regret.
It stands for squandered potential.
So you can get your own Patreon power at patreon.com/ifanboy. We're working through some stuff right now.
I always am.
Can we do this one quick, or what do you want to do?
Let's do it. Let's do it really quick, because I was like, oh, this is a thing we haven't talked about in a little bit. But
Mark V says, I've been reading comics now for about 10 years. 3 years in my teens, took a 10-year break and returned 7 years ago. I recently wrote my first comic review for a friend's website and will be doing so going forward on a voluntary basis. I was wondering if you had any tips for reviewing comics. I found myself at points almost essay writing at points and had to reel it in, and I'm guessing that will hopefully go with experience. Well, first, I would not use at points twice in one sentence.
There's a lot to learn about how comics work and what makes them successful.
There's a lot to learn about, I would say the same for reviews, how reviews work and what makes them successful too.
Yes.
There's just a lot to learn, and the last line he's got here is the most important one, is that it'll come with experience.
It's true. I mean, like, there's basic writing tips, like learn to say what you want in less time, get to your point, don't flourish. But then, you know, the other thing is also learn the difference between objective and subjective points of view.
Right.
You know, like, if you're biased, own that. Like, I love this kind of thing, so, you know, whatever. And then there's other objective things, you know, like, this is bad storytelling. And I mean, also, by the way, learn storytelling. Like really be able to spot and understand comic book storytelling, because that is the essence of what makes a good or bad comic book, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole ballgame. But
and
those are all, I mean, great general tips, but the hard thing is that we definitely developed a style and a way of doing our reviews back when we were writing the reviews on ifanboy.com mm-hmm. for 13 years.
Yes.
That I think over time became intensely personal. So they may not be the best, it may not be the best examples, because we became the faces and the voices of the reviews, so it became a lot about our personal things, and not like our issues, but like what we liked, what we didn't like. And I found myself often starting my pick of the week review with a, you know, where my head was at, because that mm-hmm. often informed what my pick of the week was. You know, it just depends on what kind of reviews you're doing as well. Because
I would
pick of the week review, I think, would be different than a regular review.
Well, see, though, I think everybody will approach that differently, but I do know that, you know, I will react to work that has the person in it. I don't care about a staid review that is written in AP style that has no, you know, that has no point of view, that has no, like, if you want to make a connection with somebody and actually have people keep coming back to you, then you have to give them part of you in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they know to connect with you. People say this to us, is that, you know, they connect with one or all of us, you know, when Ron was here, you know, because there's something of themselves that they recognize in that. And so using that is not a weakness, but it can be a strength
that's,
if you do it.
That's
well.
The only time we found success, and we've embraced it. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, don't try to do anything but be honest about how you feel about something.
Very good.
Don't worry about what people might think, or what the zeitgeist says. You know, very often we'd put a review out and people would say, oh, well, you know, every other review site didn't like that book. Who cares? It doesn't matter. Write what you think is the most important thing, and write it the most true way you can write it. That's what I would say.
I will tell you that the best, I still think of this as the best compliment that I get from professionals, from the people who make the comics, is I've heard it from a couple of people, but the original one, I don't want to say his name, but the original one was that, you know, I know you guys are going to say what you think. And so if there's a criticism, it isn't personal, and there's probably some validity to it.
I believe I know what you're talking about. And he also said, you guys are always fair.
Fair. Yeah, that's a good way.
He said, even when you guys don't like something I do, I know you're going to be fair about it. Not like, you know, there's a lot of I'm assuming a lot of this is on YouTube. A lot of Comic Review Now is sort of ranting. Mm-hmm. And we found success when not doing that. It was, if we didn't like something, we tried to be as fair as possible about it. Why didn't we like it? Why didn't it work? Yeah. It wasn't because they ruined a character or something. It wasn't from that fan perspective. It was the storytelling didn't work. This didn't work. This was unclear. The mechanics of the storytelling was what we... I think written reviews that come from the fan perspective, and we do it here for laughs sometimes, but come from the fan reaction as opposed to the critic reaction is no good. They're not useful.
Yeah. No, I think you're right about that. And I had another friend tell me, I told him something that was good, and he was like, good. I know you won't say that unless you mean it.
Right.
And I like that. Honesty. Like, it's at the core of the whole thing is you know, being honest about a thing, you know, and how you feel. And also, if you are going to pan something, if you're going to be like, this is not good, you better be able to back that up. You can't say something sucks. You can't just go, it's bad, unless you have a reason for it. And you can't have a reason for it unless you understand what it, you know, why, basically. And you know, I didn't like it is not a good criticism, you know. And then, you know, on the other side of that, there's this balance between you have to be honest about the work, but there are real people working on it, you know, so you have to you have to mean what you say, and it can't be personal if you're criticizing a thing, unless you want to point that out. You know, I don't, this goes a million ways.
There's a million ways to review a book, and I think over time you and I and also Ron developed different styles and different ways of reviewing things. I think mine and Ron tend to fall on the more emotional side of things than yours did, and that's just because we all developed different styles and ways. You'll find your own voice and your own way of looking at things as you do more of them. I mean, if you look back, our early Pick the Week reviews were terrible. And I'd also say that the way that we talk about books on the show is different than the way we would necessarily write about them.
That's true.
This is more of an entertainment enterprise, so we tend to be fall more towards the entertaining side of things, but not to discourage what we're doing. But I would say that the way we talk about a book, let's say Jimmy Olsen this week, is not necessarily how we would write a written review about it.
Yeah.
Because our review here is mostly about giggling.
Well, that was the strength of it.
Right. But the thing is, talking about a book on a podcast is very different than writing about it.
Yeah. But I would say, like, I'm still approaching how I think about the work in the same way.
The foundation is the same, but maybe the execution or the result is slightly different. Because we're trying to be entertaining.
But also, it's our voice. You have to find your own voice. Nobody can do that for you, and that's practice. You're probably going to suck for a while, and that's really hard, because if you feel like nobody's paying attention and you feel like you suck for a while, it's really easy to quit. So you have to think about what it is you want to actually be doing. Why are you doing it? Why are you spending your time doing
that? Most
likely,
is people aren't reading what you're going to be writing anyway. So make sure you're cool with that too.
We would, Connor and I would never survive in today's current written, you know, internet.
Yes.
For very long.
Yeah. I don't even know what the comics internet reviews ecosphere is like now.
It's just, I mean, like the clickbaity headlines, and clickbait. It's just the way it goes. Yeah. You know, we're lucky. We got into the thing early. Anyway, we could go on for hours.
I often see people miss all these old comic sites, but they're gone for a reason.
Yes. Yeah.
No one cared.
Yeah. The audience for the kind of thing that we do tends to have a limit to it, I think.
So thanks, Mark. Good luck with your reviews. And if you want to write to us, you can write to us.
Have fun.
Yeah, have fun.
Have fun.
Contact@ifanboy.com is the way to get to us. We got a lot of great emails this week. And if we hadn't had...
It's true.
It was, of course, the week we got a ton of great emails. We had a ton of books to talk about. So sorry about that. I thought about maybe this week we'll do 4 emails, but I was like, nope, too many books.
Nope. No, they're there. It doesn't mean we're going to get great emails next week. So, right. But you're totally right. Talksplode with Matthew Rosenberg is still out there. One of the last ones I put out. I have another one scheduled to record for next week that will be out by the end of the month. And then I am going to do a March one, and then I'm going to be on the new schedule.
Wow.
So, yep.
Wow, three in the first month, the first three mm-hmm. months. Crazy.
Well, they didn't. They had to wait since October, so that's fair. And then our Booksplode episode on Batman by Neil Adams, book three, is available for your color criticism.
It seems to have caught fire. We've yes. had more response to this one than we've had in a while.
And also, if you go into the comments for that episode, there's some interesting facts and follow-ups that people brought in. That I did not know about, and basically it's understood now that Neil Adams did the coloring himself, because he'd mentioned that in the neuro. No, not at all. But you know, at least that guy did it, I guess. Yeah. So that was an interesting. It's a little different than our normal Booksplodes, I think, but valuable. I thought for me
it was
and
a
you.
Good time. It was a good conversation. Also, the Tripwire Awards, if you consider voting for those for Bill Sienkiewicz's Revolution Volume 1 in the Best Collection categories, a book I worked on last year, the link to do so will be in the show notes. I know I said last week I would look to see when this is going to be over, but I forgot. But if you would consider voting for that, you can vote for all the Tripwire Awards. It's a UK comic award. You can go find the link in our show notes, but if you would consider Bill Sienkiewicz's Revolution Volume 1 in the Best Collection category, if everyone listening to the show voted, it would win hands down. I know you all won't, and it's totally fine, but if some of you do, that'd be great, and I appreciate that. Also, head over to fanboy.com. You'll find all of our shows. I don't think you can find their old Pick of the Week reviews there. I think in the switchover, that particular subcategory got lost somewhere. So you can find a lot of our old articles, but I don't think you can find the old Pick of the Week reviews.
Well, that's a benefit and a loss at the same time.
They are in a database somewhere. They just aren't public facing. At some point in the future, I would maybe try to rectify that. But in the meantime, you can go back there, listen to all of our old shows, find a lot of our old writing over at fanboy.com, find out what the pick is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/iFanboy or following iFanboy on Twitter or iFanboy Comics on Instagram, where you also get the Best of the Week in Panels feature. And individually, we are CS Kilpatrick on Instagram, J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram.
And if you like this show, do what you can to let other people know about it. Maybe that's writing a review, leaving a star rating on Apple Podcasts or whatever, wherever they rate things. Maybe it is posting on social media about it. Talk to people at the comic shop if you're there. It's funny. I ordered a comic book. There was a Star Wars comic book a couple of months ago that I was name checked in. Mm-hmm. Which I'm very proud of. And I was like, oh, I should own a physical copy of that. And I got a comic book in the mail. It was packed very well, eBay seller. And I was like, I haven't held a real comic book in years. And I was like, these are awesome. it was a whole other thing. And I was like, oh, right. Like, these are awesome. And I felt bad about digital for the first time ever. I'm not switching over. But, you know, like because of how we have to do things, but I just like holding the comic book. I was like, oh, this is a special thing. And it had been so long. And I felt like, I was like, that is super lame of me having done this show for this long. Anyway, if you're at the comic shop, you want to talk about the show, you do that. But, that was a little moment that I had. It was kind of cool.
Do you not hold collectors anymore?
I mean, trades are one thing. It was like an issue. Mm. You know what I mean? Like I have my books. I've read the books. We've done that. But just like an actual sort of floppy comic book issue.
Don't call it.
I'm sorry. Well, it was just I used it as an adjective, not a noun.
Okay.
So that's key.
All right, so we'll be back. I'm stretching.
That's my other review thing is choose your words really fucking carefully and understand what they mean and what they do.
Words matter.
Words matter so much. I can't. Careful.
We are two Jamokes.
Right. We are.
Okay.
I'm Josh.
It's been a long time coming, but I know change gonna come.